This is Michael. You're listening to Models of Masters, and I'm so grateful you're here. I'm breaking down personal stories, learned wisdom, and pieces of insight I hope can help you along your journey. Head over to my website, michaelbecker.org, for much more. And with that, let's get right into the show. Hey guys, this is a repurposed audio from an interview that I did on the Business Bros podcast. And what you'll hear is a recap of the content continuum, which is the new model that I present as a replacement for the antiquated marketing funnel within my upcoming book, Content Capitalist. So that is the topic of the discussion. Just wanted to provide that context before jumping in, and I hope that you find value in this episode.
Can you explain the concept of the content continuum? Like, how does that differ from the traditional marketing, what we were taught, I guess, in school, or what we were taught simply like a couple years ago?
Yeah. So let's go one layer deeper, right? I really map this out into six phases of a new continuum, because marketing doesn't happen in a funnel. And so those really are the following: discovery, nurturing, investment, enrollment, ascension, and advocacy. And they're all powered entirely by digital content experiences today. So I could talk a little bit more about that, but that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, let's dive into it. So you said discovery, nurture, and then we'll kind of go from there. Start off with the discovery. Give me a brief overview on that.
Yeah, so discovery is really just about, you know, we've traditionally called it awareness, but today it means getting discovered. And to get discovered, you have to be creating content on a large scale. So quantity and quality are still important. We're almost at a point where quantity actually trumps quality. And I wouldn't have said that 3 or 5 years ago, but there's such a race, kind of quote, top funnel, to be present and to be relevant, top of stream, that you have to be able to crank out content at a rapid pace. And that's what discovery is about.
All right. Discovery, traditionally, we would always call that awareness, right? Like, show up. You're invisible and nobody knows you exist. You got to be present. You got to show up. People got to know you even exist. Then we go into nurturing. So what happens? All right, I show up then.
Yeah. So nurturing is one layer deeper, where what we're really looking for is a subscribe to, like I said, a higher threshold channel. I like newsletter. I also talk a lot in the book about an evolving nurturing or lead gen method of the 2020s, you know, private groups, content communities, and whether that's maybe a Facebook group, maybe that's a free Zoom workshop that you run on a monthly basis. It doesn't have to be anything crazy, you know, for 30 minutes where you bring people together, answer questions, whatever the case may be. We're seeing Discord come to the forefront for a lot of Web3 creators. So places and platforms like this where you can cultivate community behind a closed or gated wall that is not available to the public represents a massive opportunity against the backdrop of a lot of that saturation that we were just talking about on social media.
It's like having your favorite sports team. You're part of that group. You wear the jersey. You rock the lingo. Like, that's who you want to be a part of. Right off the top of my head, I think of like funnel hackers, or, you know, different people, gym rats, right? Different people that are part of these exclusive groups. All right, so you got their attention. You're nurturing them, trying to get them into community. What's next?
Next is the investment stage. And I think the big difference here, man, is, you know, we're moving from a push model to a pull model within the content continuum. And we have to trust audiences to be able to take action only when, where, and how they want. You know, we have to trust that people will know how to go to our websites, to navigate through the buttons and the options at the top of the website, or our, you know, our CTAs in our pop-ups or in our content to take action. We don't need to be constantly pitching, selling in the way that we were taught and that maybe worked, you know, 5-10 years ago. And the way that we do that is by becoming a high status creator, somebody that people naturally want to talk with because of the social cred and the authority that we've created, that we've set the stage for, and that we've primed those people with through the quality and the amazing content that we're putting out, which, you know, I also present a system for what that needs to look like. Like, testimonials need to be a big piece of what you're sharing. You know, there's other ways to become sort of that esteemed, respected creator, influencer, personality. And you see some of the best, you know, kind of leading the way in that. And that's what it takes today.
That's the attractive character, right? That's the guy who's at the front of the stage, the one that personality you jive with, the one who you think is funny, the one who's done what you want to do. You get that buy-in and you get somebody to move in a direction towards your product or service. I like you said, you're not necessarily pitching, but I think we kind of are, right? I think at the end of the day, we're providing value in our content, continuing to provide value. And it's not necessarily saying by now, but you're overwhelming them with all the different things that you're doing. The testimonials are social proof that people are succeeding with what it is that you're offering. And it's almost like, I'm not telling you to buy, but I'm also showing you, like, look at what everybody else has done. Now it's time for you to take that next step. So once they make the investment, what's the next one?
Yeah. So then it's really about ascending those people in their status with you. And the way I kind of bring that to life is just getting them to make. So for most high ticket entrepreneurs, coaches, consultants, agencies, you might have like an initiation fee or down payment. I know I've seen in the past where people do that immediately, buyer's remorse will set in right after they sign up. And that's generally due to a lack of good onboarding, a lack of not having clear next steps, and a lack of just not getting them some sort of recognition or small win right off the bat to then set the stage for the buy-in on their end that needs to happen in order for them to consistently show up week after week, make payments, do the work, and become a successful customer. And so I talk about three ways to do that with what I call client success insurance, to really just make sure that you are helping to be accountable one-on-one with people, with contact. So you never want your customers to sign up with you or talk with you or one of your coaches or your AEs on a call. They sign up and then they never see or hear from you again. Like that's happened to me in previous programs. And I immediately start questioning the investment, right? And so we need to progressively up-level people in their degree of loyalty with us through that process of, you know, one-on-one check-ins. I talk about bi-directional accountability where you have you and then you have the group or some kind of an exposure to a group of clients for feedback and for, you know, co-working, collaborating with other people. And then having some sort of feedback mechanism or form that customers can always get to and fill out if they have any needs or questions that you should be responding to right away.
I love that. The ascending process is vitally important. When somebody buys from you, you got to have them have some small wins, right? You got to be able to feel like, okay, I paid for something. I got something out of it. This is working. I can keep going here. And I think, traditionally we would call these like different upsells, right? You get something. Here's another product that we can help you to your next level. Here's another product that we can help you to the next level. Sort of the same things fundamentally speaking, but the way you're coming at it is from a value point, which is vitally important, right? You came aboard. You're part of my team that you discovered. I've been taking care of you. I've been bringing you value. You've decided to purchase from me. And now we're getting you to have some results, right? This is what the ascending is. Let's get you some results. Let's continue moving you up the ladder. What comes next?
And then it's all about advocacy and developing your best customers into people that are going to spread your message. I call them ambassadors. We're talking about your best of the best. You're not going to have every single customer who gets to a point where they're literally raving about you, sharing on social media, referring their friends to you, but a small percentage always will, right? And these are sort of like your dedicated, you know, your most dedicated followers, your devotees almost. And part of the value for high-level creators who have really developed their influence and their persona is you are going to have a core contingent of a fraction of your customers who truly do love you and who literally look to you as this transformational guide who has changed their life in some way or another. And there are a couple of tactics that I kind of lay out to work to get people to this point. One that I love kind of on the forefront is running an in-person mastermind. I think the value of having a great in-person event has increased over the last several years with this reliance on digital. If you can inject that juxtaposition of serving online behind a screen, but then suddenly rolling out an amazing event, having people come together in a location. For some people, that's inviting their clients over to their house. Of course, that won't work for everybody, but I've seen a lot of people do stuff like that. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. We're not talking about a massive, you know, multi-thousand people event with stages and speakers, although that's certainly an option for enterprises. But you know, how can we cultivate this sense of devotion almost for the people that feel that and want to experience that?
There's something about shaking a hand and seeing somebody in person that can't be beat, right? Like when I first started doing this whole podcast thing, it was in person. Everybody who was on the show, I would literally, you know, they'd show up, we'd shake hands, we'd talk a little bit, jump behind the mic, you know, go and go at it. COVID came and we had a shift. And so now it became a digital thing, right? But to your point, the people who I shook hands with, they talked about it all the time because we built that relationship. It's a different type of ball game. These are the core people that now are the people who are going to speak about you. Oh yeah, I remember it. Dude, that was awesome. We had a great time, blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly what you're looking for. So You get discovered, you nurture the clients, they invest in you, you help them get small wins and ascend and get a little bit better. You bust out a really cool, nice in-person type of activity so you make these people your advocates. They're talking about you, you're getting referrals. What's the final step?
That's it. Those are the six steps right there. And so I think another distinguishing quality or attribute about this is like, there's been a sense in, at least in my career, that like people move rigidly through the funnel. And when they get to the point of making an investment or a transaction of some sort, like they're no longer in the other stages. And that's not true. That's just not the way people actually engage. Sometimes people float among the stages. Sometimes they're in all the stages at any given time. And so like when people invest and as they ascend and become advocates, we don't want them to not be a part of the groups or the subscription channels that they came in through. We're still serving them there. We're still bringing value just the same as we were before. It's just that now these people are swimming among all the six stages in the continuum. They're not just a customer. They're not just in our loyalty programs that I call a customer club. If they're working into a transaction, like they can make the decision within one day that they want to become a customer, and we have to be ready to serve them, you know, with everything that they need in order to do that. Let's say they just found us one day ago. Some people are ready to go. Some people, they take a year or two. So it has to be fluid. It has to be fluid and flexible.
Well, let me ask this from a business perspective. I mean, you're talking about becoming a content-centric model, but how does a business transition from like a product-centric model, something they've been doing for a long time, and then move into a content-centric model and do it effectively?
Yeah, great point. So look, the fact is, regardless of whether you are an enterprise, an SMB, a solo creator, the most followed brands are indistinguishable from media properties. These creators feel more like shows with episodes that happen to sell products, not like product companies that happen to post on social media. And I say that solopreneurs have to market like resource-rich movie studios. Business-to-consumer companies have to market with the agility of solopreneurs, and B2B brands have to cut through with the relatability of sexy consumer-facing brands. It's true that you do need a good product, but our modern marketplace is becoming more commoditized by the day, not less so. And so increasingly, where you're going to win is not going to be on product. It's going to be on content, or really on the network that you can build from the content you're putting out and then sell into. You need a good product, but you need really great content to even get to market. So it starts with recognizing like the mandate is to become a media company, to generate audience, figure out what they want. You don't even need a product. You just need an audience. Then sell to them what they tell you they want. As for that transition for more established companies, I think it's just like, stop talking about your product, talk about the benefit of what your product will give your audience using content, and then amplify that like tenfold. Commit to it, invest in it, create a standalone content house or property, create content assets on a daily basis that can improve the lives of your tribe, and then sell that content even harder than your product.
All right, Gary Vee, one of his quotes that I loved was, you need to become a marketing company first and everything else second, right? And that's part of the whole content plan that we're talking about here. The problem is always, it takes so much time to create content. It takes so much time to record. It takes so much time to edit. We're now fortunate to be living in a time where we have some cool AI tools and different opportunities to really shrink that editing time or that creation time and create products, content pieces that are actually pretty good and you can do it at scale. What are some growth hacks or AI tools that you recommend for like improving that or even getting a better ROI in today's digital landscape?
Yeah, so I'll give you a few, and full disclosure, none of these companies sponsor the book or me or anything. They're just tools that I genuinely like and experimenting with myself right now. Lately, I've been using Opus Clip for video shorts. I like it a lot.
Love it.
Yep. AI video tools are a dime a dozen. So maybe listeners are already using their own. But you can upload any unedited raw videos, get final vertical shorts. Where the AI comes in here, which is different, is that it spits out, you know, 5 or 7 shorts, but it will also assign a rank to them. So it'll tell you like, this reel is 90 out of 100, this one's 88 out of 100, and here's why. And it does that for all of them for each deliverable that it gives you, which is cool. There's another interesting platform that I'm looking at called Air.ai. It lets you use an AI agent to call live contacts and handle inbound calls. Incredible use case. Now it has to be trained, and I'm working on feeding my information into the tool as we speak. It needs to get to a point where it can have reliable conversations with your audience that are indistinguishable from humans. But once it can pass the Turing test for you as an individual, tools like this are really going to change the landscape, obviously, of we're talking about inbound and outbound sales automation in a way that it doesn't feel like you're talking to a robot at all. So once we start to integrate things like this, where the human touch points can actually be injected with AI, it's going to change the game. That's a step function change right there for marketers and salespeople.
Oh, 100%. Earlier, you mentioned the customer success insurance. And to me, it sounded like a way of providing a guarantee to your prospects that what they're going to do is going to work when they work with you. So what does it actually mean from your point of view? What is setting up customer success insurance actually entail?
Yeah. So the guarantee, that's the success insurance, is meant to lock in that guarantee. It's meant to make sure that it comes to fruition. You're going to share your guarantee within the offer stage at the investment point. And so the whole idea with customer success insurance, like I mentioned, it's really a three-step process, really easy to implement no matter who you are, what kind of business you have, one-on-one check-ins with your customers, right? You never want to be so disconnected from your business that you're not talking to your customers. And if you can't, once you get to that 50 customer point or so, for some businesses, it's 25, for some, maybe it's 75 or 100. You can put a degree of separation there between you as the owner and your customers. Just bring in success coaches or AEs who can step in and serve your customers with one-on-one check-ins on a weekly or monthly basis. That's point number one. Number two, some sort of group component so that people are accountable to other people, because when we tell others what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, it is a lot harder for us to renege on those commitments that we made to ourselves. It's easy to fail ourselves compared to failing other people. And so the whole idea is, like, you want to share what you're working on with a group of others. This could literally just be having a partner, like a client, another client who you partner with the new client. You get them on 15-minute check-ins once a month with your success coach. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It could be something bigger, like a WhatsApp group or like a Zoom workshop for clients, you know, depending on the size of your company. And then, like I said, having those feedback loops of some sort, something as easy as a Google form that you share with customers. Hey, if you have any questions, you know, fill this out. Me or a member of our team will be getting back to you as soon as possible. Larger enterprises often have a ticketing system, like a support chat or something on their website. So you need that as well.
Having accountability and success teams are definitely beneficial, but at the same time, there's always the plus side of having that mentorship to help you out as well. Now, you have some cool insights and notable figures that you've interviewed for your book, Entrepreneurs on Fire, JLD, right? Matt Waller. Can you share something that you learned from them, either on your interviews or that you put in your book, that kind of helped you develop your content-led commerce strategy?
My combo with Matt was crazy, like in a good way. He used to run behavioral science at Microsoft. So he's like the world's top expert on it. And one thing that he talked about was that every company is two things. It's some mix of behavior change married to some business model. Visa has married transaction fees to the behavior that is paying. Spotify has monetized subscriptions or advertising. And the behavior that is listening to music. For Pepsi, it's retail sales and the act of drinking pop. So this pairing inherently exists for every business. The question for you is, what's yours? What's that change in behavior that you need people to make to buy your product? And then how do you deliver it in a sticky way? And then that actually leads nicely into another really interesting guy that I interviewed for the book, Robert Scrobe, who talks about the retention point, which is where you have people basically hooked on what you provide, essentially. And so I use the example of Uber, where after two rides, people would use Uber on autopilot to get from point A to point B. No thinking, just impulse action result. And so Robert talked about moving that retention point, and he talks about that with regard to subscription businesses, different than an Uber or a sticky consumer app, but like a coach or a subscription brand. How do you get people to make that second payment, that third one, and so on? How do you onboard them? How do you strategically offset the uncertainty that they may face in making those first couple of monthly payments using gifting and rewards to incentivize them to stay? He talks about a gift right at day number 30. In a new program. He talks about milestone rewards where customers get gifts at certain thresholds of time with you. So I took a ton away from both of these brilliant guys. I have the full interviews with both of them on my podcast as well.
Dude, that's one of the best parts to me about doing a podcast is you get to meet people like this, listen, ask questions, learn from people. I equate it to like the Matrix when Neo gets that thing plugged into the back of his head and you just kind of get to absorb all this knowledge and you get to ask questions. That's huge. I mean, you could read books and trust me, you're going to get a lot out of that, right? Read books, listen to blogs, all that stuff, or listen to podcasts and read blogs. All that's great. But when you can interact with the person and ask them direct questions, that's even better. That's huge, right? And then, of course, you get to share it with other people as well. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Look, at the end of the day, Michael's right. Like, content is what we're spending most of our time on. You got a 30-second attention span maybe for a lot of people, and if you're not capturing them with the story or bringing them value, you're going to lose customers. And worse, if you're not putting anything out, you're not being found, which is really bad. So make sure you guys, if you need help figuring stuff out, how do I create content? How do I make it valuable? Go to his website, michaelbecker.org, michaelbecker.org. Grab yourself a copy of the book. It's coming out in April, right around the corner. And yeah, Michael, thank you very much for being on the program. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll catch you guys all on the next one. That's all we got for you guys today. Peace.
Thank you, guys.
That is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. My book, Content Capitalist, is now on sale. You can visit my website, michaelbecker.org, to grab your copy. There's also a link in the description. And if you'd like to learn more about what me and my team at NeoCore are building, you can visit our website, neocore.co. You can learn more there and join the waitlist for when we launch later this year.